Welcome to the Admin Admin Podcast, the podcast for people working in the real world of IT. If you're a sysadmin, working on a help desk, a networking engineer, an IT consultant, a computer tech who wants to know more about servers, or even if you want to get a job in the IT field, this podcast is for you. Hi, I'm Al.
And I'm Andy, and this is episode 9. I can't believe we've made it to episode 9, but here we are. So we are back. We haven't done one for a little while, have we? But we're back with a vengeance today. Yeah. There's some hot new topics straight off the press. But before that, what have you been up to this week?
What have I been up to? Well, we've been busy with work and stuff, and that's probably why we've been doing podcasts and stuff, but hopefully get back in it now. Yeah, I've been to OddCamp. It's UK Open Source Linux kind of festival. I was a bit worried about going because I didn't know anyone who was there, who was going. But went there, really enjoyed it. Went to some really good talks. Met a couple of people from the other podcasts. Met a couple of other sysadmins. And we might actually be getting one of them on come on the show to talk about Linux. So what's
his that'd
space?
Be great. That'd be great, yeah. So when was that? Yeah, was that last weekend?
Yeah, last weekend or weekend before that. So, okay. It's actually called OddCamp, but most people were camping, were actually in a hotel, but I actually was hardcore and camped in a tent save some cash and stuff. I don't mind camping, so
it was a bit chilly that weekend, wasn't it?
A couple of sleeping bags and a couple of roll mats and a couple of blankets and stuff.
Did it rain?
Yes, it did, and the tent got very wet, and it then rained for a week after it, so I couldn't actually manage to get my tent dry because my garage is full up with other stuff, and it. So, yes, it was good fun. So, I mean, I've been using VI and Vim quite a lot. I mean, if you know Linux, you can ever use VI or Vim to edit anything. It's always a bit confusing and a bit for a novice, but when got some tips, and I've finding it actually easier to use a nano at the moment. There's loads of shortcuts you can do, like if you want to copy a whole line you can press D, or no, if you want to, you can copy a line, I can't remember what the command is, you can copy and paste it, or if you want to delete a line you can go DD and it'll delete the line. It's really fast to navigate around if you know how to. So that was a really good event. What have you been up to, anything good?
I've had nothing with server network related stuff recently, just the ways the jobs fall, really. I've been doing a lot more remote work, which has been interesting, trying to learn all the trials and tribulations of doing some remote access and that. And the big news today, because we actually thought at one point that this podcast was going to be off, it was nearly delayed until next week sometime, because my broadband decided to disconnect itself last night. It actually went off last night at midnight. I was still up working away, as you do. Internet went off. It's happened before at my house, around about midnight, where it's gone off. Sometimes it's gone off for 5 minutes, half an hour, and sometimes I've give up and it's come back on in the morning. Why it goes off at midnight, I have no idea. I just assumed that they were, I don't know, resetting something in the local telephone exchange or something like that. Anyway, I got up this morning and still no internet. I was getting a DSL signal, a synchronization at a decent speed. So I thought, well, that bit's okay, but it just wasn't authenticating. So thought there's nothing I can do at this end, so I had to phone up Sky Broadband, asking what was what, and he also asked me to do a phone test, which I forgot to do actually. But when he said pick up the phone, dial 150, I think that's the customer service number for Sky TV, and it was engaged. He said, well, that's odd. And it didn't matter who I phoned up with the landline, every number I called was engaged. He tried to phone me and the phone didn't ring either. So We think it was more of a phone problem rather than an internet problem, but of course they're both related, of course. And then he actually said that with this kind of issue, you could be down for 4 days. Not working days, luckily, but 4 days. Of course, I wasn't very happy about that, but what can you do? So luckily today, I've been out and about. I'm seeing clients and that, so it hasn't really affected me. But I did actually get a few phone calls today from some of my clients saying that their internet was off. When I found out that they had Sky Broadband, I told them what the problem was. I said, you should phone them up as well, report the problem. Hopefully it'll get fixed quicker. And it wasn't until I got home about 5 o'clock tonight, it just came on again, all by itself. I've got no link here, no link to it, but I was Googling it before, and it's been on a few tech websites in the UK this afternoon. It was all around Manchester, Liverpool, Northwest area, at Sky Broadband. There's loads of people who were all offline. So I'm glad to say, in a very nice way, it wasn't just me. But luckily we're back on again, just in time to record this. So
was it a BET issue, or was it a Sky Broadband issue?
I don't know, to be honest. I haven't read the reports enough yet to see exactly what it was, but I think if it was a BT issue, it would be, you know, very, very local, you know, like your local telephone exchange.
Yeah.
But this seemed to affect the whole of the Northwest, really.
All right, okay. And do you get your broadband and phone line from the same company?
Yeah, we do. Yeah, both on Sky. Yeah. Okay. So I don't know which it was, to be honest. But the guy on the phone, and I thought, if you fix the phone, because one of the problems was, the biggest problem for me is the broadband wasn't working. I wasn't really bothered about the phone, because I don't really make calls out on the landline that much. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't bothered about that. And most calls I get are through the mobile anyway. So people dialing in, I wasn't bothered about. But it was one of those, if you fix the one, it would probably fix the other. So... But now we are, now we're back. Otherwise, yeah, I mean, had some remote jobs. What I've been doing effectively is, when I've been seeing some of my clients, is I've just been, you know, explaining to them that, you know, in the future I can do some certain jobs remotely. Said, as you know, as long as your computer boots up and you can get on the internet, they're the two major things we need to be able to do remote. I said, if one of those don't work, we can't do it. So they understand. So as more and more now, as people have been calling me saying, oh, can you come and look at this, come and look at that, I've said, okay, I said, you know, hang on, we can connect remotely if you want. So they've been doing a bit more remote work, which is it's kind of different, you know, not actually being there when you lose you know, all these things you've got to figure out, you know, when you lose connection, how do you get back in again, because you don't want to be phoning up the customer every 5 minutes saying I've lost connection, you know. So that's been one thing I've been working on. And also as well, I've been using D7 a lot more as well recently, which is it's been going all right now. I've been watching a lot more of the tutorial videos that he has. So I've been learning. I mean, it's a big program. It's not. You may get the idea that you just, you know, load it up, click go, and off it goes, but there's a lot more to it, you know. It's very very programmable in a way, and very customizable as well. So we've just been learning how to use that, and how to he's got some very good videos on malware removal using D7.
yeah
Mm-hmm. And how it shuts down processes, how you can scan for processes and different orders of doing them. So I've been learning a lot more about that as well. But it's been great, you know. I mean, I had a situation this week where I had about, there were certainly two, at one point three remote connections going on. And I had D7 running on all three of them.
Nice.
And as you can imagine, big time saver. Mm-hmm. Especially the fact that I haven't even, you know, travelled to any of these people, but I was still running three different versions of D7 on all three machines. So that's been pretty good.
What do you use for your remote software to get onto them?
Most of the time, at the minute, mostly I've been using TeamViewer.
Okay.
I know there are lots of others, and there are lots of other good ones as well. But I've been using TeamViewer mostly, mainly because some of the unattended access ones I have, they use TeamViewer as well. So it's just what I'm used to at the minute. But it allows you to, you know, drag and drop. If you've got any files or programs or the D7 Mini. Mini FX program that I use allows you to drag and drop onto the desktop of the remote machine, yeah. And then it copies it over there. But I've also used what's the other one that went paid recently?
Log me in,
yeah. Also used that as well. But there's quite a few good remote ones, isn't there? Yeah, so
so that's fun. You had some fun,
yeah.
Then.
I've had a few badly infected machines as well this week.
Yeah,
this one guy, he has an office. He lives up by me, but his company, and he has an office in Birmingham. Travels down there fairly regular, and he has it's a big office with about I'd say about 20 odd. I say big, but 20 odd machines in on a network, and I don't quite know why, because I've always done his IT work for him, but he had a problem with his tower. I think it's because he had a problem with his tower one morning. He was going to his office in Birmingham that day, so he took it with him for the IT guys to look at in Birmingham. And one of the IT guys phoned me up during the day, and he asked me about his computer, because I built that and loaded it up and run it up and everything.
Yeah.
And from the conversation, I thought to myself, I actually thought he was just a normal employee of his company. And when I spoke to the guy whose computer it was a bit later on, he said that he was in the IT department.
Right.
And this guy in the IT department didn't have a clue what was going wrong with the computer. He was asking me what was wrong with it. And can I fix it? I said, well, I said, where is it now? He said, it's in Birmingham now. Considering Birmingham is about, you know, 2 hours from me.
Yeah.
I said, well, if we can get a remote connection, I can have a look. If not, he'll have to wait until he brings it back home with him, and then I'll have a look. He said, I'm not sure if there's something wrong with the hard drive. I said, oh, why? He said, because it's taken a long time to load up. And it doesn't do anything. It's just the way he was wording stuff. It didn't sound very techie, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I've met so many people, like, how the hell did you get a job in IT? You're at the right place at the right time, kind of thing.
It must have been, because I was thinking that he thought there was something wrong with the hard drive, and I actually thought, well, this hard drive is about 3 months old. It's very unlikely that something's gone with the hard drive. And when he got back up here, I went around to his house about 7 o'clock that evening, because there was a bit of a desperate thing. I went round to his house, and I don't know how, but basically his user profile was messed up.
Right.
So it loaded a temporary profile. So what we did was I used what did I have with me? I used Trinity Rescue Disk to enable the admin account.
Yep.
Logged on as admin, which worked perfectly fine. Created a new user, give it a different name. Mm-hmm. Logged into that user. That user loaded up fine. Then I copied documents, pictures, and all that kind of stuff over to that user profile, the new one, and then I deleted the old profile.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was back up and running again and happy about it. I mean, not with a grudge, you know, because he paid me for it, you know. But I did think, well, what was this tech guy down in Birmingham doing? You know,
he knows.
Surely he could have done that. I don't know. But.
All right, so yeah, sounds like you had a bit of a fun week. Well, I've had a fun week with networking this week. Remember people saying a couple of weeks ago I was doing some stuff with some big server D6000 with memory, with a big storage. We plugged them in using 10 gig networks to transfer, get fast file transfers. But whenever we were running tests, we were only getting about I'm going to have to get this right, because I always get confused about gigabits and gigabytes per second. So it was a 10 gigabit. So it's a 10 gigabit connection, but obviously we were only getting about 125 megabytes a second throughput, which is basically as much as you get about a 1 gig, what you get on the gig network card.
Yeah.
Hopefully so. Yeah. So, we think it's due to jumbo frames. When you transfer files across networks, it puts the packets into, like, every 1500 bytes, it puts it into a new packet. With jumbo frames, you put a packet every 9,000 bytes. So it basically means it sorts the processing power. Obviously, if you're transferring a massive amount of data, every 1500 bytes it processes, the CPU has to do something. But obviously, if you can do it every 9,000, it means it only has to do it six times. It does it six less times. So you could, like, speed up your transfer by six times. So, but the problem you've got with this transfer rate is that you've got to enable it all the way through. So you have to enable it on each of the servers you're doing it on, and the switch in the middle, because if not, one of the devices will start fragmenting the software. So that's what I've had playing with today. And even without the backup job software, if I was transferring like a 5 gig ISO image over, I was only still getting 2.5 gig throughput on it. So it was like, it was really odd. Like, Windows couldn't handle it. So if you ever get this task, what you can do to really show you, because obviously with SMB and stuff, when you copy files across, you get issues with, like, overheads with, like, SMB. But I found this good utility, I think it's called iPerf. iPerf. And it's basically like a little DOS application. It actually runs on Linux as well and Mac. So if you want to transfer files, a test of transfer between Windows and stuff, you can run this, and it basically, it puts the traffic through. It just sends data between the two sites. It doesn't care if it gets there or not. It does. It will basically just max out your bandwidth if it can. So it does it by the when you first run it, it was done by the default Windows size of 64K. It was only getting like 100 meg throughput. But when I changed that to like a really high number, I was actually maxing out this 10 gig connection. So that was good. So anyone wants to test out their bandwidth for anything between what two machines are, without, if you want to know if it's like the software or something, this little iPerfs tool will help you out. So
Is that 1500 bytes? Is that called the MTU? Is it?
Yeah, kind of. Yeah.
Something transmission unit, is it, or maximum transmission?
In a packet. So.
In one packet. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what you're saying is this is 9,000.
Yeah. Jumbo frames.
Yeah, jumbo frames is 9,000. So goes into it six times. Yeah. So it has to do. So after it sends a 1500, so that's one packet.
Yeah.
So say you had 9,000 bytes to send somewhere. On the jumbo one, it only has to deal with one packet, so less energy, less processing time.
Yeah.
But on a standard 1500 one, it has to do it six times.
Yeah.
So it takes longer.
And that's the problem you've got is... Yeah. That's the problem you've got is that the CPU, if you're transferring massive amount of data, like gigs and gigs, I mean, one of these backup jobs is 3.2 terabytes, is that obviously that processing power, you're dividing it by six by enabling jumbo frames, so you could, in theory, speed up the job six times.
What processor is that affecting? Is that the processor on the NIC card or the processor on the motherboard?
On the motherboard, because it has to keep interrupting, going, yep, receive this packet, receive this packet, receive this packet.
Okay.
And the software we're using is very high CPU, because it basically, as it comes in, it compresses it and inline dupes a file at the same time. So,
well, that'll make it run cooler then, I suppose.
But I was a bit worried about putting this 10 gig in, because 10 gig is, you have to get the right cables, and these are HP switch. There's an HP network card, but it's a Cisco switch. So you have to make sure you've got the right DAC cable. You can't just use a Cat 5 cable or Cat 6 cable. You have to get a special cable for it to go into
Is it fibre?
If you're going more than 5 meters, it has to be fibre. But if they're less than 5 meters, you're going to call these direct attached cables, which basically goes into a gigabit. No, what are they called? I can't think what they're called. But there's like a G-bit connector. That's it. And it basically, it's like, and in there you can either get an adapter what goes like a direct cap cable, which could be up to 5 meters, and that's basically copper. Or if you're going more than 5 meters, you basically have to put two fibre modules in there, and then you have to have the, and this fibre can go between the two.
Right. So how much is one of those cables? Sounds expensive.
120 something or other.
Good God.
I had to get four of them.
Well, those Cat 5s I got the other day were about £2 each.
Yeah.
That's a big difference.
These NIC cards were about £500 each as well to get into the.
£500 for a. Mind you get what you pay for, you know.
Yeah.
And in that case, with that much data, you know, speed is the essence, isn't it? You get to that point, if you have too much data and it's not quick enough, there's not enough time in the day to do a backup.
No, that's the problem we've got is at the moment. And this is only a temporary solution, because we meant to be doing it over fibre, because they've got a thing called an EVA, which is like a SAN, which is basically physical disks, and then a bit massive disks, and then they're connecting by fibre to the VMware environment. And the way we're doing it at the moment is we're pulling the data directly from VMware, so it's going over the network, but that's not fast enough, because obviously the computer's got to process it. But what we can do when we get the fibre and everything in properly working, it will actually pull the data over the fibre connection. So when it takes a snapshot of the VM, it presents that VM to the server via the fibre. And because the fibre is a lot quicker, and it's all the processing of the fibre is done on the fibre card, it can transfer a lot quicker. So when it transfers it down the fibre, transit from the fibre down into the PCI bus and then onto the disks, whereas it's not actually using much of the CPU, so it will be a lot faster when we get the fibre. But the real reason we wanted to do having the network connection is that when you do a restore, you have to go, it can't restore by the fibre, it has to go by the network. So that's another reason why we've got 10 gig on it. But they've got 10 gig all on the switches and everything on there. All their servers and stuff are connected by fibres. That's why we've done that. So last week we were on the Geeks' podcast, weren't we? We stayed up very late into the morning to record that show.
That's right. I can't remember if it was night or morning.
Yeah.
It was somewhere in between, I think, somewhere.
It's really odd.
But yeah, it was good, wasn't it? Yeah.
I couldn't get to sleep afterwards. I was like, come on, I've got to get to sleep. I've got up and get to work in the morning. And I was just like, sit there laying.
You're pressuring yourself to get to sleep. I've done that before. You know, you say you have to get to sleep right now. Otherwise, you'll be tired the next day. You've got, you know, and you just can't do it. Yeah. But it was a good, it was on it. There was, Mitch was on it and,
Tim. With his laughter.
Yeah.
Really good show. I really enjoyed doing that. It was just like there's a bunch of guys hanging about on the Google Hangout talking about computers and stuff. So
there's some good impromptu little comedic lines as well.
Yeah,
which is quite funny. I've listened to it since and I'm still laughing at some of the stuff now. You know.
But it was. Glad we got on there. Hopefully we might get some more listeners now on the show, so
yeah, that's it. We could have quite a few people. I say quite a few, but we might have a few people who listen to that particular show and now are listening to this one. So if you are new, then go back and check out the hundreds of other podcasts we've done before. Well, actually no, there's eight we've done before. But go, you haven't got that far back to go to catch up. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I had a bit of a message as well from because I mentioned D7 a few times. You know, Nick Shaw, who has D7.
Yeah,
I had a bit of a message from him, and he said he'll be listening to the podcast as well. Mm-hmm. So that's one more. So
that's good. Well, actually, I was going to say I'm working from home a lot more now. Don't get to listen to the podcast in the car, but I'm actually finally listening to more because I'm actually just listening to background music. Kind of like, because if I'm not in the office, I haven't got anyone else to speak to. So if I'm beaving away doing something, if I'm not writing any documentation or anything, I'm doing. And I found a couple too. One was called Geek or the Stay at Home Geek Dad, and that sounds. It's basically just a guy who doesn't go to work. He's a bit of a geek, but his wife goes to work, and he's just telling him about his. What he gets up to really is quite interesting. I'm going to put the show today. And the other one was listening, the digital librarian, which is just he's a librarian, or he looks after a load of libraries, and he does a load of more technical podcasts doing about things like digital signage, how to record a podcast, how to record video, YouTube and stuff. So yeah, I'll put them in this. He's got 21 episodes. I managed to like go through that in 2 days.
Yeah, you're right, isn't it? You know, when you're in the car, I get to concentrate. I don't know how you find it, but I get to concentrate a lot more when I'm in the car listening to you.
I know, find you shouldn't it more be. I guess it's a bit dangerous, really.
I know you should be concentrating on driving, not listening to podcasts, but for some reason I concentrate more. But when I'm sat at home doing something else, you know, you're working away, you're concentrating on that. But yet what you're listening to, it's like radio, isn't it? Unlike the drivel that they go on about in regular radio, at least they're talking about something that has some vague reference to what we're trying to do.
Yeah, because I kind of like listen to get my favourite podcast I don't bother listening to unless I'm in the car. So if I listen to anything else, then...
That's it. I must admit, I'm behind on a few of them lately. I really have to catch up. But the same thing, because I've been doing a few more remote jobs from home, I haven't been travelling around as much. So that's been good on the old mileage on the car, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Which actually brings up something else about... doing remote, and this is one of the things that you have to kind of face. One of my customers, he I told them last time I saw him that I could do remote, you know, I could connect up from home and, you know, sort out the problems. And when he had this problem the other day, he said, do you want to connect up from home and do this remote thing that you're talking about? I said, yeah, no problem. So we went on and I did it. Phoned him back up to say it's all done. And I just got that, you know, you get that vibe from the person, and just the way he put it, he said, he think he worded it like, he said, thanks for doing that for me. That's a really good favour that you've done for me there. Yeah, thanks a lot for that. And I'm thinking, does he think that was a favour? And I suppose it's the kind of mindset that you're in, or what they're in.
Yeah.
But because I did it remotely and I didn't actually go there, then it wasn't worth anything. Mm-hmm. You know, it was like, because I didn't go there, I didn't do anything. So, you know, and in actual fact, I did it a lot. You may argue the case, well, you didn't have to drive here, you didn't have to spend the time driving or the fuel to get there. You know, but on the flip side, when he had the problem, I said, I'll phone you back in 15 minutes and I'll connect up. He had his problem fixed about 20 minutes after he first called me.
Yeah.
Rather than, otherwise I would have said, well, I'll come down tomorrow or something. You know.
Have to wait.
Yeah, you have to wait until tomorrow. But I don't know I know some other people... I know there's some podcasts on it as well about doing remote support. You
Isn't
know,
like Call That Girl or whatever.
That's right. Yeah, yeah, Lisa. Yeah, yeah. You know, and I can see in her case, because you know all of her remote work is probably, you know, probably nationwide, all over North America, I'd imagine. So yeah. You can see the value in it, but. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing when somebody lives. I mean, this person I did this remote for was about a mile away.
Right.
You know, it doesn't matter whether I'm a mile away or 100 miles away.
Yeah.
And then he said, oh, thanks for that. That's a good favour you've done for me there. And then, you know, I thought about, he said, and then he kind of put it, do I owe you any money for that? And I'm thinking, I said, well, I said, obviously I'm not there, so I said, this is how we can sort out the payment. You know, I can, you're not too far away, I can call by when I'm passing some time.
Yeah.
I can give him a bank details and you can do a bank transfer, you can put a check in the post if you want, but you know, there's plenty of ways that you can pay.
Yeah.
And he said, oh right, yeah, okay. You know, and he was saying it as if he didn't expect to pay for it. But if I'd have gone there and done it, he would have, you know, expected to pay for it. So
yeah, I don't think. I'm guessing if you never had to do it before, then if they didn't know that you're coming out, then they're doing it as a favour kind of thing. So I guess you just have to tell people.
Yeah.
That it's still going to be chargeable or whatever.
It's not a favour. Sometimes I'm not charging because it's an ongoing. Ongoing job. Well, one of my other remotes was on a newer Windows 8 machine. And what had gone wrong with that? It was something to do with the user profile on that as well, if I remember.
Yeah.
But I had loads of stuff to it had to do, you know, this Windows 8 refresh that you can do. Reset. Refresh, I can't remember which one it was. It keeps all your documents and reloads the Windows files, you know.
Okay.
But it removes all of your applications.
Yeah.
So if you've got Word on it, it removes them, Flash Player, Adobe PDF Reader, all that kind of stuff, all get mm-hmm. removed. So after I'd done this refresh, all of these programs were missing. And at the time I said, right, I have to go now. I have to go and see somebody else. And obviously there's still quite a bit of work to do. And all this work going to take time. I had stuff to load back on. I had programs to load on. I had to put a Dropbox back on. I had to put Office back in. All this kind of stuff. You know, it all takes time. So I actually said to it, right, I'll connect up later on and I'll finish it all off remotely. Mm-hmm. Now, she paid for that job when I was there.
Yeah.
So even though I hadn't finished, I know them anyway, you know, they've been a customer for a while. She paid while I was there. And when I came back home, then I connected up remotely and did the rest of the job. You know, so that's fair enough. You know, that's already been paid for. But yeah, it doesn't, when you look at it, it doesn't matter whether I go out and, you know, physically go there or I do it remotely.
Cool.
You know, some people like the remote because they can get me connected and they can go out. You know, yeah. They've got stuff to do. They don't have to stay in the house while I'm in the house. You know, they can get me connected and go out and then come back later. So, yeah, so, yeah, that was good. Cool. So we've had some more emails, haven't we?
Mm-hmm.
From some distant corner of the world.
Yeah.
I don't know where they're coming from, actually, to be honest, but... Okay, let's have a look. We've got them listed down here. Right, so first one is from Jeff. He said, okay, so I was listening to the other podcast. I don't know which one he means, but and they reference this post from a Microsoft TechNet blog. I don't know if you're going to put that post in the show notes or...
Yeah.
They actually say that a multifunction printer would need a CAL. If this is the case, where do you draw the line? I have NAS boxes, smart switches, routers and cameras. All use DNS and touch the server. I've never seen this definition before. By the way, I'm feeling the pain of a Microsoft self-audit, so this is very close to home for now. Thanks both much for your hard work in making a great podcast. Well, thanks for that, Jeff.
The reason I took the name of the podcast out, I'm not prepared to promote it. So the only reason I'm doing it is because I've emailed this. I found out about this podcast when I was trying to research for doing this podcast, and I basically put it out there to the world and a lot of people through myself. Great, I might have a cat on the back who'd be like your friend who does got a dog on the back. I've emailed him a couple of times and stuff and he hasn't responded or put me on the show, or maybe someone might put me wrong. I've tweeted him a couple of times, he doesn't come back to me. So I've started listening to the podcast and he's on one. I listen to it sometimes, but I'm not going to. So it's basically, he talks about a whole show about licensing and there's a blog post up and thing, and it's basically saying that you need a CAL for every device on your network. So it's saying if you have a multifunction device, you need a CAL for it. The way I understand this, and don't say I'm no Microsoft expert, because if you're a company or whatever, and I would go for someone where you go to buy your licenses from, because they will be able to tell you what you need and what you don't need for licenses. Because then if you've got an email trial and they say, well, why haven't you got your license, you can say, well, I went to my Microsoft Gold partner person who sold me these licenses, they told me I need this. So it looks like what it's saying is that anything what touches the server, so if you're running a DHCP server on a server, DNS server, anything like that, any request like that will need a CAL. But if you read that document, it says that you should be safe if you've got a CAL for a user and that user's using that printer. You will then be covered by that license, by that person's CAL. So I always recommend, if you always have enough CALs, so if you've got 100 people working in the office, you need to have 100 user CALs and then you're covered. It doesn't matter if you've got 200 printers, because it says if you've got a CAL, 100 CALs, and you're fine. And I mean, I'd always get things, because like, there's a number of different ways you can buy licenses. You've got things like volume license agreements, like open agreements and stuff, where like if you buy it, it's like a yearly subscription, you can get the latest software. Because you can just go and buy a box copy of Office, or you go and buy a bit of paper license like an OEM, then you're stuck with that license. Whereas you've got everything for your volume license key agreement, you've got a portal you can go to, and you've got all your software there. So I wouldn't really worry about it. I mean, if you've got 100 users and you've got your 100 cal licenses, then you're covered. I mean, the more scary thing is, I've actually been dealing with one of my customers that actually had a SQL audit. So they had Microsoft come along as on the guy on the podcast, and he never had an audit and never known anyone come around. Well, I know many companies who've come around and Microsoft audit them, and the problem they've got is they've got SQL, and because all their SQL are virtual, they with VMware they can be on any one host at one time. So you have to have I think it's like movable rights, so you have to buy the most expensive version of SQL to get that. And they hadn't brought the right version of SQL. They just brought standard, not an enterprise. So they had to buy a lot of licenses through Microsoft. But I would definitely recommend having read that blog post. But I always recommend people like a company called Softcat, I think we use. And they basically got licensing specialists. That's all they do. So you can go to them and say, look, what licensing do I need for this? And then you know that you're covered, because that's what they do in day out.
Okay.
I mean, I don't know where you'd go if you're just a one-man band or whatever. I mean, there must be other companies out there where you buy your licenses from, I'm guessing.
Yeah, so what I'm saying is, I mean, I've never heard that a printer would need a license.
No,
I
think
it touches a server, is it?
Yeah, I'm guessing if it gets its IP address from the server, or you're using DNS to connect that server,
yeah,
and it's going through that server, it requests it. That's saying when you need a license.
Okay, but if somebody, but the user a license from, so as you said, you could have 100 users, 200 printers.
Yeah, but don't say if Microsoft come around and says, Al says on the Adam podcast, you don't need licensing. Get your official,
thing, but as far as you know, that's what it is.
Yeah. I think if I read it, it says on the blog post, and it's loading up now, it says, I'll put it in the show notes so you can read it, but it says, does a multifunction printer need a CAL? Yes, if a multifunction printer is connected to the Windows Server Network, a multifunction access server software to it, receives an IP address, receives a job to communicate that job is finished, etc. In short, it communicates with server software. If the multifunction printer it accesses any software license via the server or CAL licensing model, it requires a CAL for that software. The caveat is if your users who are using the printers have CALs, then that printer covered by that user CAL. So
And what does it mean by a multifunction?
I don't know, maybe they just decided to put multifunction there. I don't know why. So, but I'll put in the show notes. But I mean, thinking if you've got CALs for every user in your organisation, then you're covered.
That's it. I mean, it probably means now there's photocopier / printers / scanners / fax machines.
Yeah.
Rather than a desktop inkjet or something. Mm-hmm. You know. So, okay. So that's one email that we had. We've got another one, haven't we, somewhere? Is that one covered, is it? Is that all you've got?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah? I'm not really going to go into Microsoft's show about it.
Okay, so here's another email. Says, hello, fellas. First off, love your show. Excellent. Definitely becoming one of my favourites. Anyhow, quick question. I just wanted to know what steps you will take to set up a brand new server for a company, small or medium, that doesn't have any servers. What tools, cables, etc. items would you bring or use? How many servers would you set up? I know this seems like a broad question, but I want to know how you would go about this. Thanks again, and I appreciate this show. So this is George from LA in California. So
yeah,
okay, yeah.
Doing?
I mean, that is a broad question, but what kind of setup would you have? How many servers you'd have? I mean, that's dependent on a few things, isn't it? But
how many users for a start?
How many users? I mean, I've come across a few places that have had a few servers for different tasks and that. You know, now years ago, I went to a place. This is going slightly off topic, but I went to a place that had two users and two servers. And I never quite figured out why. But one server did one thing, and the other server did another thing. And I didn't know why one server couldn't do both things. But anyway.
In my big corporate world, I like to have every server has its own function. So you have one function doing DHCP, one server doing DNS, one server doing file server, one doing SQL, so that you can take each part of the network down if you need to fix it, yeah. Or if you need to update it, you're only going to affect one thing. So how many users or whatever? Let's say we're going to go for one server. First thing I'd say is one server for everything. Well, let's say they've got 30, 40 users, let's say. Then I'd first say email in the cloud. Don't even bother having it local anymore, because you've licensing agreements and stuff, licensing costs, it's just going to be easier to have it in the cloud. You haven't got to worry about backing it up. Email's internet access is internet, isn't it? So wherever they are, if your internet goes down, they can send everyone home and use their internet from home or whatever.
Yeah.
File sharing, I'm guessing, is what I would recommend a file server for if you're small customers. So I'm guessing normally this kind of thing, I'm guessing here saying, like, if they've got one PC where all the files are shared from, I'm guessing. Again, with Windows Server, you obviously only can have up to 10 concurrent connections. We'd have it so that they would have it so you'd have more than 10 connections at one time. All your documents are in one place. Anything like Windows 2012 Essential Server will be perfect for that kind of users. Essentials. How many maximum users can you have on Essentials? I can't remember now. Quickly look that up while we're talking. But even full-fledged server, you can have as many. You just got to have as many licenses you can have it. So definitely have one server. A nice gigabit switch, really. Because of file transfer, and so if you have a server, you can then copy all those. You can have redirections. Oh yeah, we want to have separate domain really, from scratch. Means that everyone can log onto your other's PC. The same thing again where we had problems in the past, where we got problems with passwords being reset. We've been trialing about doing some video podcasts, weren't we?
We
did a test run, but we had a couple of issues with it, and we need to really run it again. So
that could be a good, I mean, if we can come back to that, and he could watch that video when we do it in the end, couldn't he?
Yeah, so that's all about how to setting up. But we had two Windows XP or Windows 10 machines talking to each other.
Yeah.
We can show you how to set up a domain, how to get those pieces on the domain, why would you want a domain, things like that. So
that could be a good one. That could be a good answer for that particular question, couldn't it? So if you had 30 users, one server, which was the file server,
domain controller, and
the DHCP. I mean, would that be suitable for all of that?
Yeah, that'd be fine. You wouldn't have to have too big a powerful server for that. So
if it wasn't running SQL, for example, if that was the case and you had SQL as well, would you put that on a separate server or still run it on that same one?
Normally, I would do that because I like to keep things separate.
But of course, that goes on budget as well.
Yeah,
you know,
if they haven't got the budget, then they'd have to. You could put it on there. You could run it fine.
But otherwise, because he's also asking about the hardware side of things. If you had a rack, you know, or a little server room, what would be in there? You'd have the server would either be a tower based one or a rack mounted based one.
Yeah.
You'd have that. You'd have a gigabit switch with enough connections on for everybody.
Yeah.
And also a patch panel.
Yeah.
I've done a lot of wiring of patch panels before. I actually used to do network cabling, you know, physically pulling the cables in. a patch panel with little very short patch lead running into them.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be good. Yeah, of course. Yeah, have a decent wireless access point rather than just using the router's built-in Wi-Fi.
Have a proper one. Replace. I don't know what they do in America or whatever, but I think they have Comcast routers or something. But I'd definitely recommend replacing that router with something, or a decent firewall like a Virgo or something, or NetScreen or something like that. So you've got something which is to protect the network so people can VPN.
Yeah.
Static IP address, really, if possible, to help people die. That Windows Foundation Edition is 15 users and Essentials is 25 users.
Okay.
So anything above that, you're talking about the full-blown version of Windows. But with Essentials and Foundation, you get this nice remote web workplace, so they can remote into the web server and back into the office, and they can access all their documents and stuff in the office.
Yeah, I mean, that's where your static IP from your ISP is definitely useful if you're going to do remote web workplace and things like that.
The other thing I was going to talk about, I hope that's covered. If you want any more information, just drop us a line. It's quite a broad subject kind of thing. Maybe he wants us to do a bit of a show on it. Maybe he could drop us some more lines of what.
Yeah, and he can, we'll let everyone know as well when we're doing the video one as well, and where they can find it. And he can watch that as well. So
the other day as well, I was working out how one of my customers didn't know how their VPN connection worked, didn't help. And it's basically a thing called SSTP, and basically works over port 443. You have to have a certificate, a proper SSL certificate, and it's quite good because it means it works over. You can use it through proxy servers and stuff, or if you're in a cafe and it only lets you go to 443 and 80 and nothing else. And it was terminating on a thing called TMG, which is a threat management gateway. It's actually a now defunct product from Microsoft. And that was quite interesting, is that I worked all this out. You can just basically, when you go into Windows 7, you can connect and create a new connection and say, connect to my workplace. Mm-hmm. That's the first thing it tries to connect to before it tries connecting to PPTP or IPsec. They had this, he goes, well, that's fine, you can get that, but we've got this little utility we install on all the laptops, and it auto creates the Darlin VPN, and it also puts a nice little logo of the customer's graphics in it.
Oh, wow.
And I go, he goes, can you work out where this come from? And I go, okay, then. So he forwarded it to me and did a bit of Googling. It's actually a thing called Microsoft Connection Microsoft Connection Manager Administration Kit, CMAC or CMAC. I'll put the link in the show notes. And it's basically a thing you install on it's a feature you can install on the server. And it basically you put in the details of what the IP address of what the where the endpoint is and the logo of the company and stuff. And it generates a little exe file or MSI file. And then you can just install it on each of the PCs you want to. On laptop, so yeah, that's a little
wow. Okay,
yeah, I've never seen this before.
So that creates a little quick dial-in icon.
Yeah.
So wherever they are, they can connect, dial in. What does that give them access to then?
Yeah, it gets them access to the whole network. It shuts them basically off.
Okay. Well, if we go back to what episode was it?
Last episode, I think we talked about.
Yeah, that's it. Then, okay.
Yeah, next episode we'll do some more stuff on VPN. It's in a manic day because normally when I'm doing stuff for the show notes for the show, I normally do it at lunchtime because I'm working from home now. I had to pick up the littlest one from the nursery and stuff because my wife was out, so I didn't get a chance to actually do any notes today. So the other thing I was talking about is monitoring. Martin from the Geeks' show put a post on Google Plus the other day, and it's called Fully Automated Nagios. It's called FAN for short. It's basically an ISO image you can download, and it's basically got Nagios built into it, and a thing called Citrino. I think I'll spell that. So, is that right? Citrino?
C-E-N. Yeah, I'd say that, yeah.
Yeah, and basically it's a fully fledged monitoring solution. I don't know, have you ever played with Nagios before? I've heard of it before.
No, I'm just looking at it now. It's is this run off a CD, though? Is this run off a live CD, or is it?
No, it's a thing you have to install. What Nagios is, what it is an open source monitoring tool. So things like it monitor your Linux boxes, Windows boxes, switches. It's very, very configurable. The problem is it's very hard. Well, it's not hard. There's quite a few tutorials on the internet on how to install it. But the problem is it's all text file configuration driven. So if you want to add a new host in, you have to go into a text file, add it in. Then a thing called services, well, the things you want to monitor, and you have to edit that text file, and you have to basically validate the configuration file after, you know, because if not, if you make one mistake, then it won't restart the service and stuff. So for free, it's really good, and a lot of companies use it. But this software here, you install it, and it does it all for you, and it's basically this centering thing is like a web front end for it. So it took me a long it's meant to be easy to install, but maybe if you just installed it on some hardware you had lying around, it might have been a lot easier. But I like to store stuff in the VM because I've got my virtual host, and it's running CentOS 5, and it didn't like my VM, it didn't like my virtual machine. So it took a bit of time to get working. I couldn't in the end get it working very well, so you can actually install it manually. So I put CentOS 6 on it, got it, took me about 4 or 5 hours to install it, and there's not really much documentation of how to actually configure it and stuff. And again, to have it running into a text file, you have to go into website and put in the names of the server you want to monitor. So then putting in a text file, I think it's all driven by the website. And I was found it very confusing. There's quite a lot of French websites to look at, who I think it's a French written program. So I kind of got a bit bored of that. So I was sort of, and it's actually quite, you had to be quite a powerful machine. So in the end, I ended up installing Nagios from scratch and following a couple of YouTube videos, and I actually managed to get Nagios working quite well. But I found out that, again, it's very... Again, you have to obviously edit text files and stuff. It's very hard to do. And all I want to do is I want a bit of software to monitor all my VMs I've got at home, monitoring the Linux web servers, and monitoring things like if my website goes down. And I want it also to alerting. So, and then have a nice couple of graphs as well. So, but yeah. So it took me about about 3 hours last night to install Nagios, and I was quite impressed that I installed it. And it runs really lightly compared to this full thing. Mm-hmm. But then I was looking at how to add in graphs. It's a bit ugly kind of thing. But I was speaking to our friend Al, the friend of the show, he's a network engineer. He said, "Have you tried this other thing? Have you listened to this podcast called Packer Pushers?" So I listened to his podcast. It's all about open source monitoring. And there's a thing called OM Distro. I'll put the sheet links in the show notes. I'll come back on it. And he says this is one of the better models in the Centro thing. So I'm actually downloading it as we speak to actually do configure that. And he says it's a guy that you can monitor a lot more things a lot more easier. So I'll be coming back on this monitoring tasks. Because I really want to get something which is nice and easy to monitor all my home network, and I think it'd be good in the future if I get another job or something. I think a lot of these tools are going to be because the guy was saying that if you want to use like a priority software, it costs a lot of money to monitor the software if you've got like a specialised thing you need to do, whereas open source there's like a community you can go to, and they can tell you, yeah, we can come up with that, or find and fix it yourself kind of thing.
Yeah, I think open source, monitoring is it's a very valuable tool to have, isn't it? Whatever you're monitoring, especially when you've got clients that you need to look after, you know, if you're doing server MSIs for them and that.
Yeah.
So
I mean,
you want to tell them. Yeah, you want to tell them this isn't working before they know.
Yeah. Well,
it.
At work, we normally know about problems before the customer does.
Yeah.
So we can have a core log already going, yeah, you've got your core IDs, all this already. I mean, it might be quite good for you. Maybe you could get this running in the VM and like in the cloud, and you get monitoring your customers so that you know if their internet goes down or their bandwidth goes up or something. So,
yeah.
Yeah, we'll come back to this, but I'd just like to put all these notes in the show notes so everyone, if everyone wants to have a look at it. I mean, that's really interesting, that fan thing, but it was just trying to get your head around how you configure stuff. There wasn't much documentation about it when I was trying to search for it. So, the other thing, we've got a Google Plus page now, haven't we?
How do you find the Google Plus page?
I don't know, actually. Can you just search for Admin Podcast in Google Plus and it comes back?
Okay.
We'll put a link in the show notes to it. Follow us on there, and you can, when we know next shows or we do the next videos, you've got access to it. I mean, I'd like to know, we've had a couple of emails, but I'm guessing we're not just speaking to dead air out there. I'm guessing that people are actually listening to our show. I mean, you can see how many people download our show on our... Well, I can look at our stats, but I mean, is that Google bots downloading it? Yeah, people, can you email us? I'm not saying desperate, could you? Yeah, just drop us a line saying, yeah, we listen to the podcast, tell me if it's great, anything you want. Or if you want us to cover stuff in the next couple of shows of those, give us a couple of ideas.
That's it. To the Google Plus page and you know, write a little comment or something, or email. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that's going to be it for this kind of show. I think we're going up to about our normal hour-long show. So
we are. Yeah, just over the hour now. So yeah.
So yeah, email us if you could, so we know we're not just talking to dead space.
Yeah, okay, so that's the end of episode. So the next one, don't know what it's going to be about yet. I don't know as well, you know, when do the video ones, we'll have to give those different numbers.
Yeah.
The next podcast will be number 10. Bit of a milestone for everybody.
Celebration.
We'll have to come up with something a bit different for number 10.
Yeah.
VPN maybe.
Yeah.
Or maybe more on the monitoring. Who knows?
Yeah. Well, I'll let you know how I got on with this monitoring, because I need to monitor my own sites.
Yeah.
Okay, well, you can email us at mail@adminadminpodcast.co.uk. Or you can email me at owl@adminadminpodcast.co.uk, or you can email Andy.
And that's Andy. Yeah, surprisingly enough, it's Andy@adminadminpodcast.co.uk. So no excuses for forgetting any of them.
No. Okay. Well, hope guys and girls stay safe, and we'll speak to you all soon.
See you next time. Bye now.